Hey, it's Myron Metcalf. I know you're used to hearing me join the show to explain what's happening in the world of college basketball or hosting every Sunday morning on ESPN Radio, or maybe even reading my words about everything Minneapolis in the Star Tribune. But you are going to be hearing different voices hosting ESPN Daily in the coming weeks, and I'm lucky enough to be one of them. I'll be with you the rest of the week, helping this podcast do what it's always done. Tell the best sports stories in audio, day in and day out. Thanks for listening. Bill Barnwell, you've been through a lot with us at ESPN Daily this NFL season. So much has happened. Coaches hired, free agent signed, and now the NFL draft is over. First question is, do you get a chance to take a vacation and get some rest after all of this?
That's a great question. I would love to pretend that the NFL has an offseason, that there is a quiet time of the year. It just never happens. There's never really a point where NFL news stops. So realistically, it might take a day or two, but even though all the trades have happened, even though the draft has happened, something else is going to happen over the next month or two that's going to require all of our attention when it comes to the National Football League.
Well, you've definitely earned the break. It's the Monday morning after the NFL draft, and I always try to take that bird's eye view of what's just transpired over the last couple of days. For you, what does this past weekend's draft tell you about where the NFL is today and maybe where it's going?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I really felt like over the past few years, the league had kind of grown more homogenous. And there's a few reasons why, I guess. Teams have sort of found that it's optimal to pass, and so everyone's been throwing the ball more often. There's been an increase in free agency and player movement, and so you have more sort of cross-pollination where a guy or a coach is going to go from one scheme to coach somewhere else, and they're going to teach whatever they've learned in that first place to where they've gone. There's reduced practice time, and so that limits sort of how weird teams can get, maybe, or how unique teams can get. It's easier just to share tape, share information. So I think best practices bubble up a little quicker than they did in years past. But what I found interesting about this draft is that it felt less homogenous. It felt more unique than it had perhaps in years past. We saw teams maybe heading in more distinct directions and maybe less easily definable ways than they had in years past. The Lions are a great example, a team that's been very interesting the past couple of years. They made a very analytics-friendly move in trading down and acquiring extra picks. Then they drafted a running back and an inside linebacker with their first selections in the first round. The Falcons, who have had successful running backs on the cheap over the past couple of years in Cordarrelle Patterson and Tyler Allgeier, then used the 8th overall pick on a running back in Bijan Robinson. The Eagles, they just decided to get as many pieces of the Georgia Bulldogs defense as they possibly could. It felt like teams had very distinct, unique plans, more so than they had in years past. And that made for a really interesting draft in terms of the big picture of where the league might be going.
The 2023 NFL draft is in the books, and it was one of the more unique drafts in recent memory. After one quarterback went in the first round last season, three went in the first four picks, while a fourth spent his draft night in the green room. Poor Will Levis. The Detroit Lions broke convention and the Philadelphia Eagles added more Georgia Bulldogs to their flock. So today we turn to our favorite football nerd, Bill Barnwell, to tell us how what we watched on the stage will impact what we see on the field. I'm Myron Metcalf. It's Monday, May 1st, and this is ESPN Daily.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Bill, we got to start with the quarterbacks. You had three guys in Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, and Anthony Richardson go in the first four picks. Then another guy sat in the green room for the entire first round and wasn't selected. I think everybody wanted to give Will Levis a hug by the end of the night. And even Hendon Hooker out of Tennessee lands in Detroit, where he should have time to recover from a torn ACL. So when you think about how a year ago only one quarterback went in the first round, why was the position able to bounce back in 2023?
I guess it fluctuates. You either have that quarterback class where it's like the ones we saw in years past, where it's five quarterbacks in the first round and everyone feels like we're flush with quarterbacks and it's just this beautiful new world, or the league has a year like last year when it's only Kenny Pickett in the first round and there were people who didn't even think Kenny Pickett should have been a first round pick. People are always optimistic about the quarterback class to come. Right now, it feels like there are teams who maybe look towards the top of this draft class and said, we'll wait till next year. And Caleb Williams, the USC star who might have been the first overall pick in this year's draft if he had come out. And so it felt like this was a step in the right direction for quarterbacks in terms of there being some significant difference makers. But even those quarterbacks had red flags. There was no Trevor Lawrence. There was no Andrew Luck. There were no quarterbacks in this year's class where it felt like everybody was on board with them being a franchise quarterback. Bryce Young was too small. C.J. Stroud had some hiccups, and there's been some issues with Ohio State quarterbacks, or maybe they haven't been as successful at the pro level as you would have hoped. Will Levis, of course, fell all the way to the second round. But what I think is changing in the big picture, and something that teams are going to have to address in the years to come, is how name, image, and likeness money, NIL money, is going to impact the middle rounds and the lower tiers of NFL eligible quarterbacks. Because in years past, of course, it made sense. You weren't going to make money in college or not make significant money in college. So it made sense for you to leave school and enter the NFL draft if you were eligible. Now that landscape is different. Jalen Rashada's story is notable. An incoming freshman who had a $13 million, reportedly, NIL offer from Florida before it fell through. Williams, the projected top pick in next year's draft, was projected to land $2.6 million in NIL money last year. And that number is only going to go up now here in the 2023 season. And that's a guy at the top of the draft. Consider someone like Stetson Bennett, who was a fourth round pick this year with the Rams. He's going to ink a 4-year deal for $4.5 million. I don't believe Bennett had eligibility for 2023, but if he did, he would have made more money realistically staying in school at Georgia with his NIL rights than he would have made by getting drafted by the Rams. And for quarterbacks like that, successful quarterbacks with significant pedigrees playing for big schools, it's going to be smarter and more financially lucrative to stay in school, get paid, and hopefully have the sort of Joe Burrow-esque season that causes you to rise up the charts and make the significant guarantees that come with being a first-round pick in the National Football League.
Bill, there was a guy in Will Levis that, yes, there were a lot of different projections about him. Some people thought, okay, maybe he'll be fourth to the Colts. Okay, he's not going to fall below the Titans at 11. Mm-hmm. And if he does, there are a number of teams, such as the Minnesota Vikings, that might want a quarterback of the future. Mm-hmm. He ends up falling into the second round. The Tennessee Titans still managed to get him. But help me understand, what was fact versus fiction about Will Levis's draft stock entering this past weekend's event?
Well, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, right? The proof is in where he ended up getting drafted. And I think there's always going to be an element of hype when it comes to the draft and comes to quarterback, whether it's a player's representation, whether it's going to be teams who are maybe pushing a player up the draft that they want someone else to take so they can get the guy they want. It felt like there had been a month of people sort of pumping air into Will Levis and having him fly up the draft into being a top five selection. And the reality was, when you talk to teams, when you evaluate him, you look at his numbers when it comes to how he played and look at his tape, he didn't have that kind of pedigree. Will Levis is a looks like an NFL caliber quarterback in terms of his size, in terms of his arm strength, in terms of his leadership. All those are good qualities, and that stuff matters at the NFL level. But what I would say is that the production was not consistent. The ability to make smart decisions with the football, the ability to, you know, get the ball out reliably and quickly and on time to go through his progressions. It felt like whatever you liked about Will Levis outside of his arm strength, there was going to be a quarterback in this class you would prefer because they were better at that one particular trait than Levis was. And you factor in that he didn't play his best football as a senior when so many players typically peak their final year before the draft. He peaked really the year before, and after which he lost a couple players to the draft and his offensive coordinator left for the Rams. It felt like this was a situation where all those factors came into play. And even though there are teams who liked Will Levis, and of course we saw him go in the second round, there was nobody who saw Will Levis as a sort of top five pick that he was being portrayed as in the weeks before this draft.
Let's focus on the Houston Texans for a second. DeMeco Ryans in year one said, "I ain't waiting on nothing. I'm going for it now." We saw that with how aggressive he was at the top of this draft. How do you feel about the Texans after some of the moves they made?
It's really tough. I want to toe a narrow line in talking about this because in a vacuum, I love the moves. CJ Stroud with the second overall pick, totally defensible. Obviously still has some work to do, but a guy who was very successful in college, not a finished product, but nobody was in this year's draft. So I understand. And I love Will Anderson, a guy who was just maybe the best defensive player in football 2 years ago and was unfairly dinged because of what he did last year in terms of playing different roles, moving in and playing as more of a 4-eye as opposed to a pure pass rusher, but a great player. No questions about those guys in a vacuum. But in trading up to get Will Anderson with the third overall pick after taking CJ Stroud at 2, the Texans gave up a haul. They gave up the 12th and 34th picks in this year's draft, as well as their own first and third round picks in next year's draft to acquire Will Anderson. That's a staggering sum. He's a great player, and he plays a premium position. But the Texans were not one player away, and making those sort of bets on one particular player can be dangerous. Think about the Commanders, whose second overall pick on a star edge rusher a couple years ago in Chase Young, who everyone saw as a difference maker at the pro level. They just declined his fifth-year option because of inconsistent play and injuries. Projecting prospects into stars is part of the job, of course, and you're going to have to take a shot on somebody, and Anderson looks like he's going to be a great player. But teams are usually better off amassing as many premium picks as possible, as opposed to taking them all and using them to get one selection, especially if that player is not a quarterback. For Nick Caserio, who came over from the Patriots after learning from Bill Belichick, he made the sort of move here that the Patriots have been loath to do over the last 20 years.
So the team that traded the number 3 pick to the Texans, the Arizona Cardinals, spent most of the draft looking toward the future. I don't know if that was the Arizona Cardinals or the Oklahoma City Thunder, based on all these picks they've acquired for the future. How do you feel about that approach by the Cardinals, Bill?
I liked it. I thought it was really interesting. This was widely regarded as a subpar draft, and the Cardinals make a lot of sense for a team that would push assets forward to next year. They're basically riding 2023 off. Kyler Murray is expected to miss a chunk of the season with a torn ACL, and they already had what was frankly one of the worst rosters in football on paper, even without Murray being factored into the equation. And there's one other thing that comes into play here that I think is really interesting that we don't normally talk about when it comes to regime changes in the NFL. The Cardinals just hired a new coach and a new general manager in Monty Austin-Fort. And there's a disconnect there that fans don't always think about. Austin Fort is inheriting a subpar roster and a team that has not drafted well for most of the last decade under former general manager Steve Keim. Austin Fort, of course, was in Tennessee, obviously was prepping for the draft there, but all the scouting reports he has for the 2023 draft when it comes to the Cardinals files are from the old regime, the GM who was looking over that stuff, the scouts who were working under Keim. Teams typically don't make changes in the scouting department until after the draft. So I can understand Austin Fort basically pushing as many of his chips as possible into the future, turning over the scouting department to hire people he trusts, who he respects, who he thinks maybe have better insight into what's actually going to work at the pro level, and then making selections in 2024 with more faith in the knowledge his team has assembled.
Bill, two teams that certainly aren't waiting until 2024 to make a move were the Detroit Lions and the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's start with the Eagles and Howie Roseman and Nick Sirianni's team. I'm curious if they're buying some real estate on the University of Georgia campus with the number of players it appears they intend to acquire from that program. One of the best teams in the NFL, relying on one of the best teams in college football, the best team to get talent. What do you think about this approach and this Georgia to Philly pipeline?
Well, it makes more sense than going out and getting Arkansas State's roster, right? I think in all seriousness, it was less about getting Georgia products and more about having a plan for how they wanted to build their roster and facing the reality of what's happened to them in a good way over the past couple of years. Howie Roseman, over the course of his tenure with the Eagles, has very consistently and reliably focused on the trenches. They're going to use their first and second round picks on offensive and defensive linemen to build the core of their roster. No different here. The Eagles had a great defense last year, no question, but they were able to spend aggressively on that defense in free agency and via trades because Jalen Hurts was excelling on a rookie deal. Now, Hurts has deservedly gotten a very big raise. He's making about $50 million a year more than he was making on his prior contract, and Roseman has to adjust and build his roster accordingly. That's what he did here. The Eagles lost star defensive tackle Javon Hargrave in free agency, so he drafted a replacement in Jalen Carter. Brandon Graham is winding down his career, so you go out and get a replacement for your longtime stalwart defensive end in Nolan Smith. Darius Slay and James Bradbury came back, but Slay's 32 and Bradbury turns 30 this summer, so the Eagles drafted Clay Ringo to hopefully have a replacement in place. Those guys get hurt or they slip or they get released. General managers can't control everything, but having a plan of how you're going to build your roster, not just this upcoming season, but over the next three or four seasons, and considering how your young players turning into stars will impact that roster, means that you're going to make smart decisions, or at least have a thoughtful long-term plan in the draft. And that led the Eagles to Georgia defender after Georgia defender over the last couple of years.
So the team that sent DeAndre Swift to Philly were the Detroit Lions, who surely annoyed you, by spending their first three picks on a running back, a linebacker, and a tight end. I don't know if they thought it was 1997 or not, Bill, but those are three of the positions that football analytics guys like yourself tend to devalue. Mm-hmm. So what's true? The Detroit Lions messed up in their approach, this sort of old school approach to the draft, or they positioned themselves to reach for the crown in the NFC North.
I like the Lions. I don't want to be critical of the Lions. Such a fun team to watch over the past year. It's so easy to root for Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn and the people in Detroit, but it's just difficult to make sense of what the philosophy is here. They draft Jahmyr Gibbs in the first round at 12. He's an exciting player. There's no question he's going to be a fun player to watch in Detroit, but he's not even a guarantee to be a full-time player at his position. And the Lions just went out and gave David Montgomery, the former Bears starter, a significant deal in free agency to serve as their primary running back for the next couple of years. There were lots of comparisons before the draft between Gibbs and Saints star Alvin Kamara, and they're probably warranted on the tape, but Kamara was a third-round pick. Teams can usually find receiving backs with explosive abilities in the middle rounds of the draft, but it's much harder to find star edge rushers or future quarterbacks or key pass defenders or excellent offensive linemen in the middle rounds of the draft, which is why the league values them at a first-round level more often. Inside linebacker, also in the same vein, very curious. There's almost always more quality inside linebackers to go around than there are opportunities. A couple of years ago, we saw a perfect example. Devondre Campbell, the former Falcons linebacker, signs a one-year deal with the Packers for modest money, ends up becoming a first-team All-Pro. That just doesn't happen at offensive tackle or edge rusher. Given how many picks the Lions had in the second and third rounds, it's difficult to believe they couldn't have found an impactful player at off-ball linebacker or running back later in the draft and used the first-round selections on a more important and more difficult-to-find position than running back or inside linebacker.
Coming up, we look at how two big-name veteran quarterbacks stole the show at the start of the draft week.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Bill, I want to go back to the start of draft week because as the entire NFL world was getting ready to welcome this new group of players from the NFL draft, there were 2 veteran quarterbacks who stole all of the headlines. Let's start with Aaron Rodgers and that saga finally coming to an end for both the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. What did the New York Jets do, in your opinion, to help Aaron Rodgers as they try to complement his ability and put him in the best position to win with this new franchise?
I'll be honest, not as much as I think they would have hoped. The Rodgers trade actually might have cost the Jets a player they really needed to help protect Aaron Rodgers over the next couple of seasons. As part of that swap with the Packers, the Jets moved down from the 13th pick to the 15th selection. 2 spots, you figure, not that big of a deal. But on draft day, the Steelers had moved up to the 14th spot to draft offensive tackle Broderick Jones, who was popularly linked to the Jets in many mock drafts. Courtesy, of course, of the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick somehow sticking it to the Jets one more time after all these years. And what that means is that the Jets, or Aaron Rodgers, are now directly dependent on former top selection Mekhi Becton, who has played just 1 game over the past 2 seasons because of injuries, to be their week 1 starter at either left tackle or right tackle. That's not where they were hoping to be after making their move for a star quarterback. And for Rodgers, who has been protected by David Bakhtiari and a series of great tackles over the past 2 years, not what he was hoping to see in his first draft with the Jets.
Bill, we know there's been some drama between the Packers and Rodgers. Rodgers said he had a hard time getting in touch with the front office because his phone wasn't working. Come on, Aaron Rodgers, pay your phone bill. I think you can afford it. But then the Packers' approach to the draft, that kind of felt petty as well, because one of the biggest complaints that Aaron Rodgers had was that they weren't doing enough to give him targets. And now the Packers, with Jordan Love now as the starter, go out and take 3 targets in this NFL draft. What are the chances this is the first time that a team has ever drafted out of spite?
I have to assume every Bill Belichick pick is spiteful one way or another, whether it's a player or a coach, a media member. Maybe he spited his dog after Belichick's dog was in his chair a couple of years ago during the draft. It just feels correct. But with Green Bay, I will say going after pass catchers made sense. The Packers used 2 picks last year on promising wide receivers in Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs, but all of those veterans from the Rodgers era, Devontae Adams, Randall Cobb, Robert Tonyan at tight end, the key players from this run over the past 3 years, they've all moved on. They've either been traded in Adams' case or moved on in free agency. Alan Lazard, of course, followed Rodgers from Green Bay to New York. Loading up in the 2nd, 3rd, 4th round on 5 young players at wide receiver and tight end over the past 2 drafts, that gives the Packers their best chance of finding targets who are going to grow and develop alongside their new quarterback, Jordan Love, who, even though he's now entering his 4th season as a pro, will be entering his 1st season as an actual NFL starter now that Rodgers has been traded.
So it wasn't just Aaron Rodgers dealing with drama, Bill. After what felt like forever, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens finally reached an agreement. At times, Jackson seemed to be negotiating through Twitter and with the help of some fitness infomercial guy. How did that deal finally get done?
In terms of what sort of got this deal over the line, there are 2 factors, I would say. One was the Jalen Hurts contract, which was yet another deal for a franchise quarterback entering the prime of his career that included more practical guarantees than they sort of fully guaranteed at the time of signing contract guarantees that Jackson reportedly wanted in a new deal. It gave the Ravens and Jackson a framework for a comparably impressive deal in the case of Hurts, signing a deal in terms of the 2023 cap. And I think that made the negotiations a little more straightforward for both parties. But I think the bigger factor, and the one that really caused Jackson and the Ravens to get this deal done, was the approaching draft and the reality setting in that there probably wasn't going to be a team willing to trade away two first-round picks and pay Jackson the sort of fully guaranteed market value deal he may have wanted and frankly may have deserved. Jackson's a great player. I don't think there's any issue there from my perspective, but there were teams who were understandably concerned after he missed the final month and a half of the season in 2021 and 2022 with different lower body injuries. There are teams, and I will say, I think foolishly, who regarded Jackson as a gimmick quarterback in the draft and haven't come off of those opinions even as Jackson's won an MVP and established himself as a franchise quarterback. The Ravens are building a more balanced offense than the one we've seen in years past with Jackson by signing Odell Beckham, using a first-round pick on Zay Flowers, and hiring Todd Monken to be their offensive coordinator. But Jackson's best success as a pro has come as a running quarterback who can make a significant impact in the designed run game and then as a successful passer off of that rushing attack. I did see Jackson work in a pro-style offense successfully in college under Bobby Petrino at Louisville, so I think he's capable of succeeding in a more conventional attack, but there were clearly still organizations who didn't think he was a plug-and-play superstar quarterback in the way they may have felt about Deshaun Watson when he was negotiating his trade and eventual fully guaranteed contract with the Browns.
So, Bill, Lamar Jackson did this deal by himself. Mm-hmm. How does this boost the cause, potentially, of other players in the future serving as their own agents?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it depends on the kind of player you are. I think for Jackson, it made total sense to represent himself. The top of the quarterback market is pretty straightforward. If you're a young star and you come due for a new deal, you make a little more than what the last guy in the same situation got with a relatively similar contract structure. For Jackson, he could have built that deal off of Jalen Hurts or Kyler Murray's deals, but he saved nearly $8 million over the maximum value of this contract by not hiring an agent for a deal that we expect to come in with a very similar structure and guaranteed amount to what Hurts signed with the Eagles a couple of weeks ago. Hiring a lawyer to negotiate that amount is probably a smarter idea than giving 3% of your money to an agent to do the same thing. And there's no reason for a rookie, for example, to hire an agent when their contract is already slotted by the league before they even enter the draft. For other players, though, I do think agents still make sense. If you're a marginal player, or if you're not someone who is locked into getting a certain caliber of contract, whether it's because of the franchise tag or because of how teams negotiate deals like that in the past, agents are still going to make a difference. They're going to open doors for you. They're going to be able to get better comparables for you. And I do think teams are still going to try and take advantage of players who are negotiating contracts for themselves. But Jackson's success, as well as Laremy Tunsil's success with Houston, it's going to give players at the top of the market reasons to believe they can pull this off on their own.
Bill, at the end here, and you don't have to be mean, but it is our job to analyze and critique and question what teams have done. So who made moves in this draft that either left you disappointed or at least perplexed by what they decided to do?
Oh, I don't want to beat up the Lions because I really liked the Lions before this draft. It feels like the peak of America's love with the Detroit Lions under Dan Campbell might be that post-game interview with Jamal Williams after they beat the Packers in Week 18. They knock Aaron Rodgers out of the playoffs. They end his career in Green Bay. Jamal Williams gives one of the greatest post-game interviews you will ever see, where he goes from tears to taunting in a matter of seconds. And then everything changes. Williams leaves in free agency. The Lions signed David Montgomery to replace him, and then a draft that you can charitably describe as unique. This felt like a moment for the Lions to take control of the league, to build their future, to add star talent with so many draft picks in the top 60 of this year's draft. It felt like they landed players in the first round who they could have taken in the second round. And so I believe we're going to look back on that moment, that interview, as the peak of the the Dan Campbell era Lions, and it might only be downhill from here.
Well, Bill Barnwell, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Myron.
I'm Myron Metcalf. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.